This meeting is now being recorded.
This is the American Immigration Lawyers Association Rome District Chapter podcast series. Today is Thursday, 2nd May, 2013. The title of today's podcast is Banking Issues in the U.S. for Overseas Clients. My name is Clayton Cartwright. I am the chair of the Practicing Law Abroad Committee for the Rome District Chapter. Today's expert speaker is Mark Emmett. Mark Emmett is a vice president of banking with Handelsbanken in New York City. I'm joined by my fellow committee members, Claire Nielsen of ASG Immigration in London and Jonathan Davis of Fragaman in London. To initiate the meeting, we'd like to have Mark, who's on the line, to provide us with a short bio, and then we'll proceed with questions. Mark.
Thank you, Clayton. Yes, I'm Mark Emmett. I'm working with Handelsbanken here in New York. I've been with the bank for 24 years now, 12 in London and 12 here in New York. We are a Swedish-based bank with international operations throughout the major financial institutions and cities around the world. And we have been in New York since 1989. And I am in charge of client relationships here, both US-based and foreign-based in our home markets of the Nordics and the UK.
Thank you, Mark. As we have had several discussions leading up to the podcast, I mean, one of the big issues that our clients face, particularly those who come into the US on investor visas, is the ability to, the bureaucracy and the paperwork in order to open a U.S. bank account for somebody who hasn't a business bank account for somebody who is not in the U.S. and doesn't have a U.S. formed entity. Can you provide us with some insight about what that process is and perhaps give us pitfalls and maybe even a few war stories?
Yes, certainly. There is quite a difference between opening an account as an individual from overseas and opening a corporate account. It is virtually impossible to open a personal account here in the US purely from overseas and providing information from overseas. We have not heard or been able to find anybody who has been able to do that. But there are some, especially US-based financial institutions, who provide what they call expat services. So if an individual is relocating to the U.S., there are certain banks that will take information from you so that it's all set up and in line, ready for when you arrive in the U.S., but everything is still based around that wonderful thing called Social Security number. So upon you obtaining your Social Security number, that bank will then release the bank account and provide you with financial resources like a credit card, but all of the paperwork has been undertaken and provided prior to your arrival. That is available, but as we have no U.S. bank that really covers the whole of the U.S., it remains relatively regional. So if you have a large bank on the West Coast and that's where you're relocating, you may be able to do it through them. If you're moving to the Midwest, it will be, again, a Midwest bank that will provide that. You can't choose one as a company relocating people and have them provide that service nationally. It just doesn't happen. But on the corporate side, it is very different. We here at Handelsbanken have accounts open for companies that are not completely at all U.S.-based. They're using our services here to collect funds from receipts, invoices that they're sending out from overseas. And the reason we're able to do that is that a lot of the information has already been taken by our branches in the home market, and they're able to undertake and complete from that information the full set of compliance requirements that the U.S. System requires as a bank us to collect.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you, Mark, for that. Mark, I just as a quick follow-up here, a number of our members are, I don't like the term expat unless someone's actually renounced when it comes to U.S. citizenship, but because of all the nasty exit tax issues that that are involved. But there are a number of U.S. citizens that are members of our chapter who are practicing outside the U.S., some of whom or many of whom are practicing as sole proprietors. Mark, so those individuals have Social Security numbers, so they have that information, but they may be based in London, for example. Would Handelsbanken be able to, since they have the magic Social Security number, if such a sole proprietor would, say, want to open up an account with Handelsbanken or another U.S. bank, I would imagine they shouldn't have too much of a problem, or if they would, what would those problems be?
The main problem would be possibly signing of documentation. Some of the, let's say, horror stories, as you put it, we have heard is that individuals based out of the U.S. who want to open accounts here have needed to actually fly all the way over to where the branch is that the company wants their bank account and be in the premises of that branch to sign the documentation, even if they are a U.S. citizen with a U.S. Social Security number. A lot of organizations don't have the flexibility to find an alternative way to have the documentation originally signed. We at Handelsbanken can do things slightly different because of the branch network we have. Those individuals can sign U.S. documentation in the local branch where they're based, if Handelsbanken, of course, has a branch network there. So the U.K., where currently we have 148 branches, there should be one relatively close to where the individual is based so that they can go in and sign documentation or deliver originally signed documentation to that local branch. A lot of the U.S.-based banks don't have that flexibility, and they're relatively rigid in their compliance requirements and their need to follow the exact rules and regulations that they're under. There's no particular problem with that if that's the way they go, but it doesn't always allow the customer to have that flexibility to undertake the account opening in a flexible way.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for that. In addition, would there be any difference in the example I provided for the membership, if the member formed a limited company in the UK and set up their professional practice there? So now, of course, to have a U.S. bank account, that limited company would have to have a federal taxpayer ID number, the FEIN. But other than that, once they have that, would that make things a little easier than as opposed to a sole proprietor coming in with a U.S. Social Security number? Does that make things easier for you at Handelsbanken, or is there any material difference?
I don't think it really changes much, Clayton. There's still, from the authorities, a very strict list of information and documentation that the bank is required to obtain. So it doesn't really matter at the end of the day which way they go about doing it. It's how the bank can make sure that they meet the federal requirements of Know Your Customer and have on file the documentation needed to make sure that you are not providing what, of course, they're wanting the banks not to do, to fund terrorism and any of the drug running and operations that are illegal, which, of course, they're worried that banks will not follow the regulations and allow the criminal element to obtain access to bank accounts that much easier.
Great. Thank you for that. From the standpoint of those who are practicing, of our membership who are practicing, who do not have U.S. Social Security numbers. A large number of our membership practices outside the U.S. do. But for those members and for clients who don't, because they are their first contact with the U.S. is the establishment of of U.S. business relationships there, or just in terms of just viewing the U.S. as a target market, I would imagine certainly it's easier for them to be able to have a corporate entity. And there, you don't, I believe under the rules, the responsible party rules that have been changed within the past few years by the IRS to obtain a federal employer identification number, you do not have to have the responsible party, the person who binds the company, doesn't have to have a Social Security number to form to get an FEIN. Or is it? And maybe this is a leading question here, but how difficult do you view it? In terms of if you have a non-U.S. business entity that needs a bank account, and none of the individuals have U.S. Identification numbers because they're small. They're based in the Midlands, for example, in the U.K., and they don't and nobody has – because they're 12 people strong, but none of them have an I-10, an individual taxpayer identification number or a Social Security number. Does that become – how difficult can that be?
It doesn't really provide any difficulty as long as you have undertaken the necessary Know Your Customer activity. And we at Handelsbanken in New York here do not provide services to companies that the bank does not already know. So, for instance, if you take the example of the company in the Midlands, the fact that they may or should be already a Handelsbanken customer at one of the branches there, that UK branch has undertaken the UK necessary compliance and Know Your Customer requirements, which actually is a little bit stronger than the US. In the UK, you need one picture ID and one proof of address, which will be a utility bill or bank statement, to confirm who the individual is, and therefore you can then undertake the necessary individual searches to make sure that the person isn't somebody who has a criminal background or has a number of failed businesses. When it comes to opening a bank account here in the US for that limited company, we can piggyback on the documentation that's already been obtained by the local branch. So we don't have to ask all of the signers on the account to provide us with a new set of picture IDs because the branch in the UK already has them. We don't need to ask for a new set of certificate of incorporation because that's already been obtained. The other thing you have is that you also have in certain jurisdictions like the UK access to all this information online through Companies House, which in the US you don't have that opportunity. So you are reliant here in the US on the company or the individuals providing you with the necessary information of who the directors are, what their signing powers are, and all of the necessary documentations for the setup of the company. You cannot obtain that in the US from an independent source, while in the UK you can. And in the other Nordic countries that we deal with directly, that information, again, is publicly available. So that helps us make sure that we're dealing with somebody who is legitimate and they have a very strong business need. And we also undertake from the corporate a necessary description of what they want to use the bank account for. So if it is because they've won significant contracts with a U.S. distributor and that distributor only wants to pay the money in dollars to a local bank account, then there's a legitimate reason for them to have a bank account here in the U.S., where, of course, if it's a much larger U.S. institution, they actually may be fine in making payments overseas by international wire. Then the overseas company doesn't technically need a U.S. bank account. But we're finding more and more U.S. companies not willing to make overseas payments and demanding that they make a local payment here in the U.S., or in some cases, we're seeing corporate credit cards being greatly used for business-to-business payments, which therefore means the problem the company has in the U.K. is that they may not have a merchant service or have the ability to obtain merchant services here in the U.S. to take dollars from a dollar credit card and pay them in dollars. They'll have to charge the credit card in the U.K. and get paid in sterling, which means, of course, they have higher fees and, of course, the currency translation.
Of course.
This is Claire here, if I might just jump in quickly. Some of our clients have, you know, we as a routine course, like many U.S. attorneys practicing outside of the United States, ask our clients to provide checks for the filing fees for immigration cases that we're filing. And the Immigration Service in the United States will only accept U.S. dollar checks for filing fees that are drawn from a U.S. bank where the branch of the bank is physically located in the United States. I believe that's because there's a routing number on the check that identifies the location of the branch, if I'm understanding it correctly. And many of the banks that we have in the United Kingdom, for example, where I'm based, are able to offer U.S. dollar checks, but they offer it through offshore branches that do not have the necessary routing information on their checks to be accepted through the Immigration Service. Do you have any advice in terms of checkbooks and how to obtain them that are suitable for these to be able to write these types of filing fee checks?
Well, we've had some experience of that recently where a UK company was setting up a US operation, Greenfield site, out on the West Coast. And even though that US company had a US dollar checkbook, the filing fees were not acceptable to be actually drawn on the company. It still had to be like a banker's draft or cashier's check that was coming from a U.S. institution. Now, we at Handelsbanken have the ability through our partner banks to accommodate that. But if you're overseas, I think it is very difficult unless the bank that you're dealing with has a U.S.-based institution and then, therefore, the checkbook they use clears through that particular branch. A lot of the foreign banks are not looking to clear through their own New York office because the regulations from the Federal Reserve and the New York State Banking Authority are so much more stricter on banks that are clearing dollar payments through their New York office. As you have seen in some of the cases that have recently been well publicized where some of the large international banks have been heavily fined for not following the necessary regulations. So you're finding that a lot more of the foreign banks are moving away from clearing their own dollars and they're using third-party banks here in the U.S. So when it comes to getting that those checks for your filings, you may need to make sure you're using banks that have a very close relationship with their U.S.-based bank that's clearing their checks, and they may have then some form of checkbook from that U.S. base that will have the routing number that people are looking for.
So Mark, I mean, this goes to the fact that, I mean, that we've mentioned previously the fact that practitioners for filing fees that aren't based in the U.S., it can't be a trust account. And for those listeners on this podcast, please do not contact Mark concerning lawyer trust accounts or interest on lawyer trust accounts. Mark is an expert in many fields, but not in that field. So we're not really talking about trust or IOLTA accounts, but say a U.S. practitioner that is overseas, an immigration practitioner, would have the ability to form an account, a business account with Handelsbanken, provided that it satisfies all the regulatory requirements, and it should, to advance filing fees on behalf of its of their immigration clients. Is that correct? To be able to pay them.
That's correct, Clayton, absolutely. I mean, for instance, Claire, if your company had an account open here in New York and the account was funded and we agreed all the fees, as unfortunately the U.S. is very fee-based banking, you would have a U.S. dollar checkbook and you can hold that in London and you can issue those checks if those checks are acceptable to the filing department, and then you could write those checks out. They would come into us from the immigration service, and they would be processed like any other normal check. And then you would have our clients have the ability online through our internet service to get real-time viewing of the bank account, so you will see when that check comes in has been cleared, and you'll see your balance and all the activity. So you can keep a good record of which checks have been paid in, and therefore you can know which of your applications are going through the process.
Great, Mark. Thanks for that. And from the standpoint of just moving on here and during the course of this podcast, I mean, many times as practitioners we'll see the issue of the entrepreneur, the investor visa that pops into play, and that is where a non-U.S. individual is looking to set up business operations in the U.S. under an investor visa, and they have to go through the process of forming a U.S. entity. During that, typically it's a U.S. subchapter C corporation that they'll form. If you could, I know we've mentioned, and I guess the mantra of this podcast is know thy customer. Can you sort of contrast or discuss perhaps someone who's in those shoes that may be a longstanding customer of Handel's Bank and say in the UK, who's looking to do this, versus someone who is referred to Handel's Banking by U.S. immigration lawyer, and then maybe discuss how, you know, during that process, or maybe provide some insight to the process where someone is going to set up a it's always California. They want to set up a California C corporate, a California corporation, and obviously they need a U.S. bank account. If California is not a relevant jurisdiction, please substitute it with another one. But the point is that you know, we looking at now someone, you know, providing or, you know, making that smooth transition of providing services to a U.S. corporate entity from somebody who's moving to the U.S. from the U.K., an entrepreneur.
Sure, Clayton. The issue, I think, is if it's an existing Handel's Banking client, you, of course, need to go through the normal setup of the U.S. company and using your contacts, your legal contacts in the U.S. to do that. It can be a relatively simple process depending on the jurisdiction that you're looking to set up the company. Once you have that documentation, due to the Handel's Banking client being well known to, let's say, the branch in the UK, there's a lot more flexibility for us as a Handel's Banking New York branch to take faith in that the information will be forthcoming. And maybe we can start the process a little bit quicker and earlier than maybe some of the U.S. institutions who have a very strict opening account process. So there is, under the Know Your Customer and AML, anti-money laundering requirements that the feds provide you with, there is, in most cases, like a 30-day period where you're waiting for information, you don't need to stop the process. And once the account is open, if after 30 days you still have not got the necessary paperwork to complete the requirement that the regulators give you, you can actually close the account down, and you have the rights to do that. We very rarely ever get anywhere near the 30 days because the whole process is already well in the steps to be completed, and it may be only a week or so later that you end up getting the necessary documentation. With Handelsbanken, if you are a company that gets referred to us, we will need, of course, to have some necessary discussions, get to know you a lot better. I don't think it's something that goes hand in hand if you walk into a branch of the bank elsewhere in Europe and open a bank account and immediately say, can I have a bank account in the US? We would be a little hesitant. We would be making sure that we're fully aware of who the local company is that's just walked into the door. And once we are fully okay, the UK or a branch in Europe that has done their necessary local KYC, once that's all completed, then we will start the discussion about the need for a US bank account if that's the direction the customer wants. We are very customer driven, so we are probably maybe even a little bit more attention to that than some of the other banks who are more product driven, where the management in branches get given a specific target of account opening, selling of this product, selling of that product. We're not like that at all. We tailor make everything to our customers, so we need to know from our customers through regular contact what their needs are, what their plans are, where they're looking to go around the world, and that has been how the Handelsbanken network has grown. We have only opened branches in parts of the world where our customers have required our presence. So it's a lot easier if you are an existing Handelsbanken customer than it is if you are a new customer. But the same process will take place. We won't be looking to get anything extra. We will look to meet the requirements that the regulators have given us to make sure that we complete all of the account opening requirements that are necessary.
Hi, Mark. This is Claire. In terms of what you're saying, I mean, you might have answered this already, but and just so that I'm clear, I mean, obviously, Handelsbanken has the benefit of having branches in the UK and, you know, Western European countries. If it is a customer who's in a jurisdiction where you don't have a branch outside the US, for example, I used to be based in Trinidad and Tobago. I'm not aware of there being a Handelsbanken branch there. If you have somebody who's in another jurisdiction but who comes to you referred through whatever source, you know, what kind of provisions do you have to be able to assist those types of people or those types of businesses where maybe they might come from a jurisdiction where the authorities there are not quite as on the ball as they may be in some other countries? And sort of a second point to the question, do you have any sort of oh crikey moments where you think, oh, if only the client knew this, we could have done this so much better? You know, are there any examples you can give us of ways that would make life easier for people in setting up a US bank account?
Thanks, Claire. I think there'll be a lot of Handelsbanken people applying for a branch in Trinidad and Tobago if possible. But yes, you are correct. We don't have one there. It's very difficult for us. Handelsbanken's reputation is very much relationship driven. And I think it would be extremely difficult for us, not only internally, but also with the regulators, to look at opening bank accounts for companies where they are not really a Handelsbanken customer elsewhere. That's not to say it's impossible, but I guess one of the reasons that we have been extremely strong through the European crisis, banking crisis that recently everyone has seen, is that we just did not have any connection to the countries that are known as the pigs. We don't have any presence in corporate presence in those countries, so we've not been exposed to those kind of things. And the reputation of the bank being that kind of bank, I think, is held quite highly by management, and it's not something we would really want to surprise people if there were instances where it became knowledge that we had been providing services to a company that had absolutely no connection to the Handelsbanken and branch network. Horror stories, yes, we've had situations where companies, mostly sole proprietary type companies, who have not believed the length of requirement of documentation that the US authorities require for banks to have bank accounts. And even this is not just at account opening, there are periodic reviews that need to be undertaken with clients to make sure that the information you have is valid. You make sure that the signers on the account remain the same individuals that you have had in the past. Because it could easily be that somebody's added within the company or left the company and you have not been told. So when you do these periodic reviews, you find out that there are people now who they want to add as signers on the account, which you then have to go through the required KYC of picture IDs and obtain the necessary documentation to add these people. Sometimes you find that ownership of the corporate might have changed. Now, again, the requirement in the US is for you to fully know how the ownership is structured, who has the influences, and in most cases you need to get a picture ID of any owner that, in our case, we have a 20% level. I think the banks can be a little bit, some banks may have 25, but it's normally around that figure. What you find with some clients is that they think that they don't have to provide this. And we've had instances where, due to their non-willingness to either confirm what we have on our books as correct, we've had to close accounts down because there's no way we can have those accounts on our books if we're not meeting the requirements of the US regulators of know your customer and having the sufficient identification. And unfortunately, we've had to go to that nth degree because of the fact we do not want to have that reputation that we're not meeting their requirements, because you can see from the fines and the publicity some of the other banks have had here in the US in the last few years, those fines are pretty hard if you're not following their rules and regulations.
Okay, Mark. Well, thank you for that. We're coming to the close of our podcast here today. Before we officially end it, I'd like to open the floor for any other follow-up questions from my fellow members or any other comments from Mark.
I suppose my only question would be, obviously, the people who are listening in on this podcast, many will be based outside the United States. And I suppose I'm wondering if there are any sort of recent advances in banking that might be particularly useful to those of us based outside the United States for conducting transactions in U.S. dollars.
There have been advances if you're U.S.-based. There's a thing called Check 21 now, which is produce the ability for companies based here in the US who unfortunately still get a lot of checks as payments to be able to deposit those checks remotely through a scanning machine into their bank account from their offices rather than have a formal lockbox where you direct everything through that lockbox account. From an overseas point of view, I think you need to be very aware of how things like FATCA might change the way you are making payments. Your banks may be demanding more information from you to identify all of the corporates. You may be required to provide addresses for every individual corporate that's involved in a payment. And a lot of that information, especially in US dollars, where you'd have to cover that information between banks here in the US, your payment will be fully viewed at those correspondent banks. So they will be undertaking all of that information through the necessary OFAC and regulatory databases, where beforehand you might have just been able to get away with some reference numbers. That's not going to be the case going forward. You will really have to provide nearly, if not as much information to the correspondent banks as you do with the direct payment. But otherwise, I think as long as people are fully aware that banks are not asking this just because we feel like we might need it, there are very, very strong requirements, and they are changing all the time. And we at Handelsbanken can want to make sure that we fulfill all the requirements that are needed to meet the US regulations, and the same for all of our European branches and their local European regulations. Unfortunately, it's not going to go away, and it's going to be probably something that gets stronger and stronger as other banks who have been recently fined. What you find is the regulators increase the need even more as a result of finding the deficiencies that some of these banks have seen on their books of opening accounts. And we just have to do more and more as a result of that.
Okay, well, Mark, thank you for that. Unless there's any other questions or comments from Mark or from our fellow panelists here, I'd like to announce the end of this initial podcast for the American Immigration Lawyers Association Rome District Chapter. This is the first in our podcast series for 2013. I want to thank Mark for his willing participation here. Mark had spent a lot of time with us off this call preparing, and so many thanks to you, Mark, and also a big thank you, a special thank you to Claire, who was instrumental in a lot of the format of this podcast, and certainly to Jonathan as well. This is Clayton Cartwright, and I'm going to ask our expert Mark and our panelists to stand down for a few seconds here as we conclude this podcast. Thank you.